ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Another gorgeous day here in East Central Alabama. So hope everybody doing well. It's Bill and Dan here in the studio. Justin Ferguson is usually in on Thursdays, but since I will most likely, and I'd say it's very doubtful because, oh, by the way, Drew's pulling in. By the way, I've been told I'm not supposed to drive for 24 hours after the procedure that I'm having tomorrow. They're going to knock me out, I guess. So, I probably won't be able to be there tomorrow, but I'm excited to know. As a matter of fact, I was on with Ben this morning on Auburn Opelika this morning, and he's saying, hey, are you guys going to be anywhere this week? And I said, well, I'm pretty sure we are, but, you know, I didn't have the official word from Dan yet, but I heard you break it earlier today heard you break it earlier today on the Max Roundtable that the drive indeed will be on the road tomorrow and at a place that has been around for quite a while, the original Mama Goldberg's.
Yeah, is this on? Am I working?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. Our friends at Bud Light have set us up with another live broadcast. So tomorrow, the drive live on location, we will be at Mama Goldberg's Deli, West Mag and Donahue, right off campus.
Yeah, that is Mama G's number one
since 1976. Mm-hmm. Bill, that's the official date.
I was in there in 1976.
You were there in 1976.
Absolutely.
50 year anniversary coming up for Mama G's.
Well,
by
yeah,
the way,
that's a year and a half.
If my math serves. Well, we were talking about how we're just a couple of months away from the 20th anniversary of Sky Bar officially.
Right.
The official open date was.
You know what? It is the 20th anniversary of the 2004 team, which will be honored Saturday at the Auburn Vandy game.
And you know what? Let's handle the business, and then yeah. I have a point to make. I used it on the Observer podcast too, but I have a point to make about the 04 team and something that, you know, might inform Auburn's approach over these last four games. But let's take care of the let's take care of the official stuff.
Oh yeah. So but anyway, yes, Mama G's tomorrow. Justin Ferguson will be there. Don Dunn will be there.
Yeah.
And Dan will be there.
Very exciting.
So that's great.
But come by, grab a sandwich or some nachos or a Bud Light before Auburn basketball.
Yep.
Tomorrow night. Bud Light would love for me to point out that, of course, they're also selling Michelob Ultra and Bud Light
at the arena.
In Neville Arena, second year of that. It was It was warmly received last year, was the understanding. We talked to Haley about that a little bit earlier this season. So, yeah, exciting stuff that Bud Light is helping us go to Mama G's tomorrow. Come by if you get the opportunity.
Yeah. Now, of course, we'd love for you to join in today. A little note about today. We will be a little short today because we've got Auburn women's basketball coming up. Went over and caught some of Bruce Pearl's time with the media today. And as we were walking in, Coach Johnny Harris and Auburn were practicing, and then when we got done, LaGrange was working out there in the arena. It is their exhibition tonight at the arena. Admission is free, so you've got an opportunity to check out what should be an exciting Auburn women's basketball team. And we're going to have all of the Auburn women's basketball games are going to be right here on ESPN 106.7, starting with the 6 o'clock tip tonight. So we will be saying goodbye at around 5:40 this afternoon before we turn things over to Britt Bowen and Dr. Larry DeShera for Auburn women's basketball.
And Britt and Britt and the Doc do a great job on the radio. Excited for another season. Should be Coach Harris's most talented team at Auburn so far. I think it's a testament to the conference that they're still projected towards the bottom half of the middle, you know, but the SEC could be a 10, 11, 12 bid team this year in women's basketball. That's how good the league already was.
Mm-hmm.
And you add
Texas and Oklahoma.
Genuine Final Four contenders, two of them in Texas and Oklahoma. So the league's going to be absolutely cutthroat this year, but Coach Harris is coming prepared with a with a talented team.
Now, so Justin Ferguson not with us today. We will have David Paschal. We'll talk with him at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Until then, we'd love to hear from you. Anything that you want to talk about sports wise? Congrats, Dan! Your Dodgers win without having to play another game at home.
We love it. No, it's it is. I mean, they're my favorite team. I also, and it's tough to be impartial about this, I got a very nice congratulations from Andy Burcham earlier today, and I told him, I'm biased, but I find this to be a likable group the Dodgers have assembled as far as the players individually. I think Freddie Freeman and Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I mean, they're not a lot of guys who usually spark controversy.
No, I think they're easy players to root for by and large when you know their stories. I think Walker Buehler is a pretty easy player to root for when you think about the depths. Bill, you followed it in our Greystone League. The depths of Walker Buehler.
Yeah, I could only hold on to him for one of those complete years missed.
Yeah, like I mean, but the struggles not just in the years he missed, but also in the ineffectiveness when he was back
this year. But it clicked in the NLCS, and he had it again last night for a perfect ninth inning to wrap it up.
If it had not been for Freddie Freeman hitting like Lou Gehrig,
yeah, you're
in
right.
This,
then
in this.
he would have been right there at the top of the list.
Oh, he's. I mean, what Walker Buehler did wins you the World Series MVP in most seasons. When you think about the start he delivered, and then the save. Yeah, the save in Game 5 with the series on the line. So, just yeah, I'm happy for the guys. I eventually thought the reliance on the bullpen would cost them a playoff series. I just thought that the starting pitching injuries, not having, and I know everyone deals with injuries. I'm not asking for sympathy here, but like not having Glasnow, not having Kershaw, not having Gavin Stone, I thought that was eventually going to catch up to the Dodgers in a seven game postseason series. This bullpen, Bill, like did they delivered over and over again?
They really did
from the Dodgers, whether it was. Trinan, who was great in moments, high leverage moments, Bazooka, Gratterall, right? Doesn't seem like he's just playing pitch and catch.
What's funny is he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts.
He doesn't get a lot of strikeouts.
It's a power ground ball kind of guy is what he is.
The hard sinker and the Kopech, Banda, Vesia, the whole gang. So I thought that was just. It was great to see, and probably Dave Roberts is great. I mean, even though he already won a championship in the short season in 20, I thought this was Dave Roberts' best moment. And Bill, is there a Hall of Fame case for Dave Roberts with his Dodgers tenure now culminating in a second championship and ten division titles?
Winning the division titles. Yeah,
I mean, I don't know how many more division titles he would need to. I mean, it's already a pretty strong case on that front, isn't it? With 10 plus or so, and now he adds a second championship. So I don't know. It's an exciting time, and I don't know. Could be. I don't necessarily think the window is closing next season.
No, not at all. It's not like they're a team that has a bunch of players that are on their last legs.
Well, you have Ohtani planning to pitch next season. Mm-hmm. We'll see how that goes. Glasnow's coming back. The Dodgers presumably. I mean, Yamamoto has that huge contract. We'll see if this is it for Kershaw. Felt like towards the end. Feels like we're certainly very close to the end. If it's not the end.
Yeah, he's 37, 38.
Flaherty's a free agent. Maybe the Dodgers bring him back, although last night was not his finest moment.
Nope, it sure wasn't.
For the Dodgers. A lot of people think that when Max Fried is on the open market, the Dodgers could be a...
You've got to figure the West Coast teams are very much going to be a factor for him. That's home.
That's been a player linked to the Dodgers in the offseason. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, they've got I want to see the idea of Ohtani pitching too on top of everything he did last season, like that alone gets you amped for next year. But yeah, happy for a lot of the guys on this team.
Yeah, for the Yankees, a nightmare of a fifth inning last night. I mean, that was something, the kinds of things you don't you don't expect to see in the Little League World Series, much less the Major League World
Series. No, I mean, we saw a Yankee fan pulling a ball out of Mookie Betts' glove in this series.
Yeah, yeah.
And we saw...
And then you saw Aaron Judge make his first error of the season. You see, I mean, you had guys who are noted very good defenders just...
I'll tell you, I hate...
Just completely lose it.
I'll tell you why I hate that for Judge, too, is because that's the kind of mistake that he could have one of the great regular seasons in history next year. And people
again,
will...
He's exactly. Had a couple of them.
Yeah, and people will still bring up... People still bring up the postseason struggles and the World Series struggles until, like, he's got to get back to the World Series and then play better in it.
But he did have two hits, including a homer last
night. He did.
Night,
he started to come alive, you know, compared to the beginning. But the error, I think, overshadows even
I mean, a routine, you know, liner.
How many was it? Five unearned for Garrett?
Yes,
or,
five unearned. Wow. Because he came within an eyelash of getting out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, two E's and a non-covering, and him not covering first base.
Smoltz
and still almost got out of it.
Smoltz, who I thought was excellent in this series, I thought Davis, and I'm partial to Davis too. The former local guy.
He was local for a few years.
Counts
in Montgomery.
It counts. Yeah, yeah. He was part of the 3-3-4 for a little while. But I think Davis and Smoltz were excellent and have been excellent in this. Like I was a critic of the Fox baseball presentation for a little while, Bill. But I'm pretty happy with. Felt like they cut away from the post game pretty quickly and on broadcast compared to some other.
I didn't watch much of the post game. I caught up on some.
But
other
I think the in game's excellent. I think Davis and Smoltz are very good. And Smoltz throughout the series hammering base running and defense as spots where people might not realize the advantage the Dodgers had over the Yankees. And you saw was that in this last game, yeah, a couple of base running. Mistakes by the Yankees, couple of base running opportunities seized by the Dodgers, and some crucial errors.
No question about it. So baseball is done before November. That's the way it should be. And now we've got basketball, as we said.
There's already been a trade in baseball.
Right, the Braves trading Jorge Soler.
The offseason has started. The hot stove is lit.
Teams have only got until Monday, right?
Big okay.
To try to work out deals with free agents.
I know we got a lot of other stuff to talk about. We'll go to break and do it that way, Bill. I think it's the easiest way to stay on schedule. But since we're talking baseball anyway, offer some predictions. Alonso will be a. I don't know.
I really don't know. I think there's so many options for him.
Do you think he prioritizes winning with this contract, or do you think he takes the biggest dollar offer?
I think he would like to win. I mean, he's going to get plenty of dollars. He can probably
I'm just wondering if like a team that you know wants to add a big bat that wasn't necessarily in the playoff hunt this past year made a call.
They would have. I think they'd have to pay him a lot more than a contender would.
Would Houston want us to get in that business to keep the window open for the other guys in that championship run? You know what I mean? Like Bregman
Alonso's still in his 20s.
He's still in his 20s, but guys like Altuve and Bregman, right? You would think like a piece like Alonso gives them a 2-3 year title.
There will be quite a few teams interested in that bat. Yeah, I would think so. I would absolutely think so.
So especially if they don't get Soto.
Yeah, yeah. Because
Rizzo is there right now.
Rizzo,
but I mean,
he's on the backside. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to follow the free agent market and the hot stove league. So that's always fun. All right, we're here to talk anything you would like. Sports-wise here on this Thursday. Obviously, Auburn-Vandy Saturday morning. We'll look at the rest of the country and around the SEC. Auburn basketball. I mentioned Bruce Pearl met with the media. If we have an opportunity, we could run some of that as well. But we'd love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
Don't forget, Bill, tonight, Skybar Costume Contest.
Oh,
it
that's
is
right.
It is Halloween night, and so if you're looking for something to do tonight, Skybar, 8 to 11, sign up, and then the contest gets going after that. Should be a lot of fun. An Auburn tradition, unlike.
I was thinking about this, and I thought I might ask. I ask you, but I mean, we can ask our listeners too. Do you have a favorite costume through the years that you've worn? What's the favorite? What is your favorite costume
The best costume I ever assembled myself from like thrift stores and props like toy stores and stuff.
We used to go as themes an awful lot.
That's a good one. My best costume ever was probably the Monopoly Man, Mr. Moneybags or whatever. Uh-huh. I had the top hat. I had the tux jacket. Found some red ribbon to make a bow tie. I had a cane. I don't know if he actually carries a cane, but it felt on brand.
Felt like he should.
Yeah, he feels like he should have
Mr. Peanut though.
Now,
a little bit
now should he have?
Cane,
should he have? Do you think the Monopoly Man has one of those canes that where the knife sticks out of the?
Sure.
You hit a button and it's.
Sure, he should.
The gentleman cane. All right. Okay. Skybar costume contest tonight. Anyways, text box 334-564-1840. That's how you can get through on the text box, sponsored by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast.
All right. We'd love for you to join in. We'll get to our first break here on the Thursday Drive.
7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Taking your calls, questions, comments, and also your favorite Halloween costume. How into Halloween are you? I've talked to a few people today that are like, just get it over with. I enjoy it. It's fun. I mean, one of the things we miss is our friends Floyd and Teresa hosted Halloween parties for years and years and years and up until COVID, and they haven't done it since. But I think they're one away from a ridiculous number. I don't want to say how many because it would make us all sound so old, which some of us are. But I mean,
it's back when Mama Goldberg's opened.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I may have seen the demence at a party or two. But yeah, I mean we've gone. Kathy and I have a lot of times have gone. With different themes in mind, and sometimes obscure, but those are sometimes really fun ones. An easy one to do, but one that people it took a little while for people to realize exactly what it was when we went as Dog and Butterfly, and things like that. I mean, it's easy to do.
All right, yeah, I like that.
But then they're wondering, what the heck are you two doing together or something? And it's like, oh no, some things like that. So if you've got a favorite one or a favorite theme or something from the past. Now,
what are the tiny ones doing for Halloween?
Kennedy was Elsa the other day.
Okay. I still haven't seen two. I've seen Frozen 1. I still haven't seen.
Okay.
Two.
Yeah.
It's pretty, have you seen Frozen?
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't seen two.
Still not clear about how the snowman comes to life in Frozen. But other than that, it's airtight. Airtight movie.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So she was Elsa. She has two outfits because I mean she's gone to a couple of different things, and you don't want people to see you in the same thing all the time.
Sure.
So she was Elsa Sunday, and today at school, she was Elsa, and then. Yesterday and I believe tonight, she's Baby Shark.
Okay, Baby Shark's a good one.
She loves that. She's always always wanting to hear that and sing it. And then
they cracked the code, the algorithm of exactly what a kid.
You're not kidding,
like,
dude. Do, 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 do.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was extremely popular. And then actually,
sometimes that just happens, right? Like the Macarena.
Yeah,
right. Like sometimes it just
I showed you the little pumpkin.
Yeah,
that's
very cute. That is very cute.
She is like Little Miss Halloween.
Oh.
That's yeah.
How old is Sarah is now?
She is. I was thinking about it today. She's 25 days.
Wow. 25,
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, 25 days. She'll be 3 weeks. She'll be 4 weeks old on Sunday. So.
So it's her first Halloween.
Yeah, it is her first Halloween. I doubt that she's really getting the full. you know, the full
it's
measure.
First
of
everything.
It.
It's her fourth, yeah, it's her fourth
is,
week.
What? Well, the thing is, and Kennedy, I mean, Kennedy's 2.5. And my wife is like, you know, I need to not be as into some of the things that I am. I've got all kinds of animatronics that I've gotten over the years that I like to put out in the front yard. And those might not be great for a 2.5-year-old. But I mean, when I like it when some of the bigger kids come up and they go, "Oh, what is this?" Think, and it says something back to them. Or
I
something.
Think as long as the 2.5-year-old has an adult nearby, sort
that's
of
true.
Explaining she's, that it's all
well, she's,
like, she's
seen,
a good she's a good sport about
she
these
has
things.
Seen most of these things.
She handled the chickens.
Oh yeah. Well, she's seen the
she's
pirate.
Good about the chickens,
she's seen
yeah.
the pirate that I have with a parrot on his shoulder, and he's fine. She calls him. I mean, she likes she'll speak to him when she sees him. But I turned him on just for a second. She wasn't too crazy when he was speaking back to her. It was okay for her to speak to him. But it's fun when a few folks in the neighborhood really get into it, and you've got houses and yards decorated and things like that. And I'm glad we have more. There are more kids in the neighborhood now than there have been. It's like one generation has sort of moved out of some of the houses, and we've got some younger folks with kids that are, I'd say from, you know, 4 to 12, which is really cool for Halloween. It's really cool, and they've done some really neat things in the neighborhood. So that's good. It's not quite as much fun when you're the only house for a couple of blocks that's got anything, for two reasons. One is, if anybody does know, they're expecting you to make up for the fact that other houses don't have anything. So they feel like, look, I've come a whole block. Give me a couple of handfuls of candy. Or the other thing is, you don't get any kids because they make the corner and they don't see any lights on. They don't see any decoration. So they just sort of go to another neighborhood. And that's sort of a bummer when you're sitting there and you've got all these things there and got a bunch of candy and it's
you've mentioned there have been Halloweens where it feels like your street gets a lot of kids, right? There have been Halloweens mm-hmm. where it's
oh,
kind of
yeah.
quiet and yeah, we'll see what it's like tonight.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder where are these kids coming from? I mean, it's like, man, they bus them in from somewhere.
Hey, you'll take it though. Better that than
you don't want to run out.
Yeah.
You don't want to run out.
But better than that, like you said, nobody yeah, showing that, up and knocking
true.
The door.
All right, 334-321-1390. Again, Auburn women's basketball, the exhibition against LaGrange coming up tonight, 6 o'clock. So 5:40 will be when we leave the air today. So
how are you feeling about tomorrow, about Saturday's game, since you might miss the show tomorrow,
yeah,
depending on how you're feeling?
I probably will, or if I'm on the show tomorrow, I may not know what I'm saying.
You may be kind of, yeah. We'll.
I mean, I'm incoherent plenty of times, but no, I feel pretty good about it. I do. I think that, that Auburn's win Saturday was just something that they've been close but unable to close the deal on three or four occasions this year, and I like the way they've been competing. I like the defense. I think DJ Durkin's defense is playing better with a bunch of young guys out there, and I think the offensive line, if they can, you know, find ways to keep getting Jarquez Hunter the ball, I think they've got a great chance. That takes the pressure off the passing game. That takes the pressure off Peyton, as you were saying the other day. I mean, after the interception, he was nearly perfect as far as passing is concerned. He was, what, 14 or 15 or 15 of 16 after that. And that's because Auburn could run the ball. And Vandy, in its road games this year, has given up over 400 yards per game. So, I mean, if Auburn can do that, can move the ball on the ground, I think they've got a really good chance of winning. I'm not so sure about, you know, how comfortable, because Vandy's going to hang in there and play Auburn tough, but I think Auburn's got a really good chance of, you know, coming out with a win, and hopefully they can stay healthy. That's been the other thing that they've done pretty well this far.
Yeah, I think it's crucial to keep Vandy sort of off schedule offensively. Mm-hmm. Like if they can.
Oh man! Don't let them just control the
clock.
Yeah,
if it's second and short, or you know, if it's in or even third and short, because on third and short, Pavia will get it himself, and mm-hmm. he'll get a couple yards. Top 5 rusher in the SEC this year.
The second most attempts of any player in the SEC.
I mean,
I wonder how Auburn's going to defend him. You think Auburn spies him?
I mean, it's important to remember, like, of the 11 guys Auburn probably starts tomorrow, Saturday, Bill, how many of them were on the team for the New Mexico State game? Like, think about it for a second. Like, right? I mean, you're probably – Malik's probably going to start.
Jalen McLeod.
Guys who were there. Falk.
Last year?
Yeah, Falk, McLeod.
Asante and Cain. Austin Keys. Cain was playing by then.
Yeah. Although, is Keys still starting?
I think he was listed as a starter this game, but I didn't see him as
like of the 11
most.
Of the 11 defensive players you're going to see the most on Saturday. A lot of them
were. Eugene Asante definitely was. There's a guy and
but like think about this. Riddick wasn't there.
No.
Blockton wasn't there. Keyron Crawford wasn't there. You get into Sylvester Smith and Caleb Harris didn't play.
Isaiah
on the team.
Rakes and
Jay Crawford. I mean, right. there's a lot of defensive player. I mean, it's a new look.
But there are enough of them that were there last year that can let these guys know exactly what it was like a year ago.
Oh no, I don't think Auburn is. I would be shocked to see anybody take Vanderbilt lightly the rest of the season. They made the top 25.
But taking
Alabama.
Them lightly and explaining. You know, what it's actually like when you're out there on the field with Pavia. You look at him, and he's not the most, you know, he doesn't wow you with his measurables.
The fact that you're facing a team that already beat Alabama and played Texas and Missouri extremely close, like that I think is a – if there was any aspect of last year's loss to New Mexico State that was mental, that was the guys not being ready to play because it was a game sandwich between SEC games – I don't think you worry about that this year when it's a team that's played the way Vanderbilt has played so far this season. You'd worry about that maybe in an average Vanderbilt season, but this isn't an average Vanderbilt season. So I think the danger is that they can just come in here and outplay you. You know, if they can keep these drives going. I mean, they had multiple 5-minute plus long drives against Kentucky, and if they can do that. Then,
well, remember, they had the ball 42 minutes against Alabama.
Yeah, and they only
42 minutes,
and they only scored 20 points against Kentucky. It's not like they blew them out or anything, but they had the ball over and over and over again.
It's crazy. As much as they had the ball, they only had 288 yards.
They only had 288 yards, but they had long. I mean, there were times when they only had seven plays on the drive, but they were stretching it out to 4+ minutes and bleeding the clock and. What that
tells me that Clark Lee, as the defensive coordinator as well as the head coach, wants his offense to help keep his defense off the field.
Oh, I think so, and I think they're extremely comfortable, taking the clock down to under 10, every single time and shortening the game that way. And I think for a lot of teams, it's such a shock to not have the ball. If you only get 2 or 3 possessions in a half. That's so different from modern college football. That's what New Mexico State was doing to people last year. It's what Vanderbilt would love to do to Auburn on Saturday. And the key is, I mean, you need to get some shots in on first and second down if you're a defense, and you can maybe get them off schedule.
Yeah. So we'd love your thoughts on the Auburn-Vandy game or anything else you want to talk about. We've got some Bruce Pearl audio we can let you hear as well as we continue here with the Thursday Drive.
7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Love for you to join us. As we said, we've got some Bruce Pearl audio. One of the things that wanted to pass along, if we get a chance, we'll let you hear some of it a little bit. But Miles Kelly is cleared for full practice, so we will see if he is able to go out there tomorrow night against Florida.
We'll talk some Bruce in a sec, but we had something interesting during the commercial break we can get to. But before that, basketball, Bill. What are you looking forward to Friday night? What do you want to see?
Well, I'd love to see Miles Kelly. I mean, that's one thing, because Auburn didn't shoot the ball well at all at Furman. That's one of the things Bruce talked about today. Said Auburn's going to have to play a lot better offensively than they did against Furman when they get into big time, when they're playing big time competition, SEC, and Houston, of course, is just next weekend. Auburn's going to have to be able to shoot it. And he said, he was talking about starting Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell together, saying they may do that. May not mean that they stick with it or, you know, play it for long stretches, but they may do that because of some of the problems that it causes for matchups. But then he pointed out that the front court, Dylan and Jani went 3 of 14 in the first half against Furman. So, I mean, that...
You know, I think they love the defense. They love the defense,
right? And rim protection for sure.
And I think there's a belief that Jani probably needs to develop his skills as a four for the NBA. Like, I think he's more useful in professional basketball as a five who can step out and play the four with more one-dimensional rim protecting centers alongside him. But I also kind of think that Jani's. I just think that the stuff Jani does well as a four makes him so much more valuable as a five.
Mm-hmm.
But when you slide him over to the four, he's still very good and very valuable, but you're running some offensive problems depending on who's playing the five with him.
That's right.
It's not
Jani. It's, you know, who is he working with at either the four or the five, and what is the best combination offensively and defensively.
And I think his best position probably is the five in college basketball, ultimately. That's going to be something to work on is something they try to figure out over these next couple of weeks is how often do those two need to play together? And if not, how do you divvy up the minutes at the five and who needs to be playing at the four, with one of those two.
Yeah. And Bruce pointed out that, Chaney, he'd really encouraged him to be more aggressive. The problem was he got into early foul trouble. And that's one of the things that happened with Chaney a year ago. Bruce went on to talk about the fact that Chaney is looks much different than he did a year ago. Said watching some film on him from a year ago, he could barely recognize it because he is so much bigger and stronger and faster this year. But he's got to stay out of foul trouble there at the four.
And athleticism was never Chaney's problem.
No, right?
At all. Chaney a year ago was a mind-blowing athlete. But it's some of those. Some of those lapses in technique and lapses in judgment that can impact him on the court and especially defensively.
You would hope that a year of playing at this level would he'd be able to adapt to that, because coming from the smaller schools, he was just so much better than anybody else. He could jump over guys. He could come up from behind and make blocks and things like that, which you can't get away with when you're playing, against the top athletes at the D1 level. So we'll just have to wait and see what those combos are there. And I asked Bruce about how he felt about the point guard play the other night, because the only thing we could tell was that JP Pegues played 20 minutes and it was at the point. But he did say yes, Denver and Tahad also played some minutes at the point. So he got 40 minutes. Yeah, one thing he wanted to remind people is he got 40 minutes out of three guys who weren't playing point a year ago. And that's probably the first time he's gone into a season with guys who weren't playing the position either for him or even playing the position a year ago. But that's the other thing. It'll be interesting to see how the minutes are spread around at the point tomorrow night against Florida Atlantic. One thing I wanted to get into, I saw this story earlier today, and it doesn't seem like it's picking up much steam, or there's not a lot of concern, and that is the fact that apparently the helmet communications have been on unencrypted frequencies, which according to the report on ESPN, anyone with a knowledge of frequencies could tune in. And this happened, apparently it first was discovered by a frequency coordinator for the Texas A&M Arkansas game. That's been a while back. And that coordinator notified the SEC, also Baylor and TCU, and they then forwarded information to the Big 12. And now, actually, one of the first comments from this has been Texas Tech AD Kirby Hokut saying this needs to be addressed. They need to get the communication encrypted because, I mean, remember back in the preseason, you're there at media days, and the talk was, well, this is what the NFL uses. Nobody's going to be able to tap into this. Apparently, it's been available for anybody who has a knowledge of such communication.
Right, and I wonder if this was if this was miscommunication between, because there's a company called GSC that handles a lot of the
Power Four.
Yeah, handles Power Four, the provider for all 68 Power Four teams this year. The Big 12 has instructed its schools that are playing this weekend to return their devices back to GSC for a software update that would provide encryption. But it is, and I guess there are two stories on ESPN.com about this. There's a story from yesterday, sources college helmet communications on unencrypted frequencies. Mm-hmm. More recently, there's the story with the Big 12. The Big 12 has determined that none of the games were compromised by unencrypted frequencies used with coach to player in game communications.
Well, is that this just season. Luck? I mean, because it's funny that the SEC and all the major colleges, the major conferences, apparently have known about this mm-hmm. now for about a month, and nothing's really been done about it. And a couple of the responses are, well, you know, this is highly proprietary type language. It's almost like they're speaking different languages, and you won't have enough time anyway to do anything about it.
You're paraphrasing the Big 12 chief of staff who's in this in the article. He says, quote, there's no real advantage. One, you're speaking a different language. Two, if you'd think you'd be able to enact in real time what they try to say and do on the field, you're delusional. You're just being your stereotypical paranoid football coach. You can't relay it to the kids fast enough.
How delusional would it be if with the situation that we've talked about with Auburn, say, you know, if you know you want to run, no matter what, mm-hmm. run. If they're able to hear that, I would think you'd be able to relay that to your defense.
A source at one Big 12 school told ESPN that earlier this month, his staff purchased a scanner and was successful in locating their own coach-to-player communication frequency during a practice. the frequency did not broadcast all headset communication between coaches, but merely what one coach said to
the green dots,
to probably one player on the field.
Right.
And only when the coach is when the coach is holding the button. But still, it's the communication. Yeah, it's.
Would it not be? I mean, I guess if you knew that was going on, you'd wait till the last second to say something like run, or you know, if you've got a specific type of blitz or something like that on defense.
I think
there's a chance that some things could be compromised.
Here's my thinking. My guess would be that the four conferences thought this was encrypted all along, and they were ambushed.
I'm sure they thought it was encrypted.
They were ambushed in September by the news that this thing could be accessed publicly, and they've tried to keep this story quiet for 4 weeks
while
they try to fix this.
While they get the software ready to encrypt
it. And I guess the idea that it was still unencrypted this weekend rubbed a couple of Big 12 coaches the wrong way, and Kirby Hokut.
That's a pretty fair.
Because Kirby Hokut, there had not been anything public. Apparently, the Big 12 ADs and coaches learned about this when Kirby Hokut said something.
That's what's crazy.
I want to get that.
Where is that? I remember seeing that too. It said, because I read that in the story earlier today that it didn't sound like they knew about this until very recently. But it says in the SEC, the league has communicated with all its programs about the security update available. The league office is attentive to the issue, sources said, but there's not a high level of concern over communications being compromised. That's coming from the SEC office. I wonder what individual coaches would say about there's not a high level of concern about that.
Yeah, I want to find the Yeah, it's in the Big 12, concerns about potential vulnerabilities had not been addressed at the AD or coach level until Hocutt's remarks on Tuesday.
That, so they kept the coaches and ADs in the dark.
That's apparently what happened. And Kirby Hocutt has since told ESPN.com, quote, and Kirby Hocutt is the Texas Tech athletic director. I would say respected as one of the best athletic directors in college football. Like, I don't want to go too far there, but
he's very respected.
Widely respected. This is not some guy going, you know, not some rogue lunatic or something, right? Like, it's Kirby Hocutt. Quote, we've got to have a game whose integrity is not questionable in any way on a Saturday afternoon. We owe it to the 120 young men on our football team to ensure that happens, that it's a game of fair competition and the same set of rules are enforced, unquote.
But see what's a little later on, it says the
no schools, and importantly, no schools have made specific allegations believing that an opponent has accessed in-game frequencies. And there is the quote there from somebody, you know, at least one source within a league saying, even if you listened in, there's a question as to what kind of competitive advantage you would gain.
I wonder, maybe it was just the conference offices then, because it says Big 12 Chief Football and Competition Officer Scott Draper said the four conferences met weekly to discuss the next steps, and each chose the same path forward to inform the head equipment managers of what we knew.
So that may not have gotten to the AD
or
coach level.
How could you're going to let the equipment manager know, but the coach doesn't know?
I mean,
That doesn't sound very likely.
Maybe it was the first time anybody had said something publicly at the AD and coach level until Tuesday.
I sure hope. All right, but I just thought that's an interesting story that has been, you know, it hasn't made big headlines.
Well, I'll read that again. In the Big 12, the concerns about potential vulnerabilities had not been addressed at AD or head coach level until Tuesday. Is that no one had said something publicly until Tuesday?
That means maybe all the ADs had not discussed amongst themselves.
You would guess that the Big 12 coaches knew about this a week ago.
I would sure think that they've known about it. I'd be really surprised.
I still feel like if someone's getting thrown out, look.
Because remember, it says that the first time it came up was Texas A&M Arkansas, and that person contacted a couple of Big 12 schools.
This feels like a situation, Bill. I'm glad you brought it up. This feels like a situation where someone's going to have to stay after school. GSC feels like, when they have to decide on a scapegoat for this thing, I feel like college football is going to look at the equipment provider and wonder why this wasn't on, especially if they can easily fix it and put them on secure frequencies,
right. Why
that wasn't happening from the very beginning.
Why it didn't happen immediately after it was discovered. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Don't forget, David Pascal joins us in hour number two, so come on in and join us as well. 334-321-1390 here on the Thursday Drive.
If you truly
can. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Final couple of minutes of hour number one. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Again, programming notes for you. Show is going to end a little early today as we turn things over to Britt Bowen, Dr. Larry DeShera for Auburn Women's Basketball, which will be right here on ESPN 106.7 all season long. Tonight they have an exhibition against LaGrange, and the admission is free if you want to head over and check that out. Or you can listen to it right here on ESPN 106.7. Tomorrow, the drive going to be on location at the original Mama Goldberg's.
Very excited about that, Mama Goldberg's Deli on West Mag, just right. I mean, just a few steps from Jordan-Hare, and a very short walk from Neville Arena as well. If you're going tomorrow night to Auburn versus Florida Atlantic, for basketball, the exhibition going on tomorrow night, we'll be there at Mama Goldberg's hanging out. Thanks to our friends at Bud Light, we'll be doing a little pre-basketball tailgate at Mama Goldberg's Deli, and yeah, Bill, I'll have some nachos in your honor if you can't make it.
Yeah, I'm gonna be on a soft food diet.
That's right.
For a few days.
I'll have a nacho or two for you.
Yeah, you can do that. I will do my best to at least listen if I can't, because again, I don't imagine I'll be there. But yeah, that should be a lot of fun tomorrow. A lot of excitement about basketball as well. And we're going to talk with David Paschal from Chattanooga here in just a few minutes. We've got the top of the hour break coming up. Stick with us. We're right back with more of the Thursday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two here on the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls as we head toward another big weekend. Auburn finally back in town for football and basketball, just about ready to get underway as Auburn women's basketball coming up tonight. That one, as a matter of fact, right here on ESPN 106.7. So we'll be turning things over to Brett Bowen and Dr. Larry DeShera. We will sign off at 5:40, turn things over to them for the 6 o'clock tip tonight for the exhibition game against LaGrange over at Neville Arena. Then tomorrow night, Auburn men's basketball, after defeating Furman in an exhibition game up in Greenville this past Sunday, has the home exhibition against Florida Atlantic tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And now, that ball game is only going to be available on the app, so it will not be broadcast on the radio. But a lot of excitement, obviously, about the nationally ranked Auburn men's basketball team as they play their first home game.
AuburnTigers.com and other different places where you can access the app. But yeah, basketball action tomorrow should be a lot of fun as Auburn welcomes Florida Atlantic for a charity exhibition, just a couple of days away from the opener. And a little more than a week away from a showdown with what some people think is the best team in college basketball right now going into this season, the Houston Cougars, playing that one in the house of Jabari Smith in the Toyota Center.
That is right.
They're in the NBA arena in Houston.
Yeah, so it's not considered a home game for Houston because it's not at their place, but it's in their town. So. Yeah, so that's coming up. But
well,
yeah,
Brian, it's better for Auburn than it's not a home game for Houston.
Oh, yes, it is. Well, it's better for Houston too for their RPI.
But it's also better for the a couple thousand Auburn fans that probably can go to the game.
That is true.
In the NBA arena, that probably wouldn't be able to go to the game if it were on campus at Houston. So yeah, should be that is going to be. I know a lot of people are still in college football mode in November. That's one of the bummer things about the big November college basketball showdowns, Bill, is that, you know, a lot of people aren't necessarily in college basketball mode yet in November. Auburn-Houston is a game that should get your attention very early in the season, and we're going to get it the first week of the regular season in college basketball.
But it is another big weekend in college football. Look around, though. You do have Alabama, Tennessee, Texas, and Missouri have the weekend off. But there's some very intriguing games once again in the SEC and around the country. And as we usually do on Thursdays, we're going to head to the Drive Hotline. And we're going to now call in our good friend from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and Sport Talk on WGOW, just wrapping up his show up there a few minutes ago. And that's David Paschal. Hey, David, how you doing today?
I'm doing wonderfully, because if you're talking Auburn football or Auburn basketball, whatever you're talking with the Los Angeles Dodgers as your world champion. And I know Dan likes that a lot.
Oh, he absolutely does.
Hey, how about? I mean, there's a lot of how-abouts from that series. I mean, Freddie Freeman, of course, but Walker Buehler. I mean, coming through.
Oh, yeah.
Coming through, just so huge in two different moments in this series. And yeah, hopefully that's. You know, hopefully he's back on a more consistent basis to being pre-injury Walker Buehler, because that guy was a phenomenon.
Yes, he. I mean, he anchored down part of Vandy's 2014 mm-hmm. national championship team. But yeah, it was great to see, given what he's been through. And you think about Dustin May, hadn't been a part of that rotation for a while. He's been hurt. Of course, Kershaw missed it. Glasnow, you know, Yamamoto being back. You think about Ohtani getting to pitch next year. So yeah. I mean, it is just wild the potential of arms they could have. But given what Buehler's been through, yeah, that was. Dan, I don't know about you, but it's probably my favorite World Series just because as a kid who grew up watching the Yankees beat the Dodgers twice, that was sweet. Even though the Dodgers got him in 81, it was nice to see him get him again last night, especially in five games.
Yeah, well, the other side doesn't feel so great, but whatever.
I honestly, 2020 was so special because there were so many guys from that team that I wanted to see get a World Series championship, namely Kershaw, but others too. That I wanted to see win a championship with the Dodgers before their careers were over. This one, you know, I didn't realize at the time that people would discount or mock the idea of a championship after a 60-game regular season, but they do, especially the people whose teams didn't win that season tend to do that. But yeah, this is still really special for a lot of these guys, and yeah, maybe solidifies a strong case for Dave Roberts. So I think. Yeah, really, really special season.
Yeah, the thing about 2020 that I think legitimizes or helps legitimize is you did have the two number one seeds. You know, it was a 16-team field, you know, eight in each league. I think if the Dodgers had played like the sixth best team from the AL, you'd really have people wanting to bring up an asterisk. But I think because Tampa Bay did finish first, I think that does help legitimize that year.
Yeah, regardless, two and 5 years now, and this one nobody can say anything about. So yeah, you're absolutely
agreed.
Yeah, let's talk a little football first from this past week. Might as well go ahead and get your thoughts on, you know, Auburn finally able to close out a deal. They'd been close a few times, but this isn't horseshoes. But they did take care of business after what looked like. Man, a potentially terrible start there. I mean, they're down 10-0 and throw an interception. You're thinking, oh, man, this one, Auburn may not even be close to have an opportunity to let it slip away late.
Yeah, and you think about the final play of the half.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, the only thing that can't happen is Peyton Thorne dropping back and taking a sack. You know, and that's exactly what happened. But for Auburn to come out in the second half and then, you know, make it a 17-10 game, I mean, just a special night for Jarquez Hunter. Just it's so wild. I'm 57 years old, and Kentucky's beaten Auburn once in my lifetime, and it wasn't in Lexington. So I think about all the times I went up there with Auburn, and Auburn came away. It's just a wild deal that they just always managed to beat Kentucky. But no, you're right. You're talking about a game that was just. I don't know of a team in the league that needed a win more, and they got it in real convincing fashion. And, boy, I tell you, I mean, you noticed in the game there were a lot of stoppages of play because Kentucky players were getting hurt, and now they're a beat-up team having mm-hmm. to go to Knoxville. And that one, Tennessee should just absolutely, you would think, put a thumping on them, especially after Auburn did. I mean, because that was a misleading final score when you think about the yards being – 498-224. I mean, that usually doesn't reflect a 24-10 game.
Oh, no. I mean, Auburn could have easily scored there at the end of the ball game to make it 31 when they took a knee, and you mentioned the end of the half. And, yeah, there were a couple of opportunities they had. But, yes, they moved the ball much better, I think, than a lot of people expected them to against the Wildcats. All right, we'll sort of go back and forth. I want to get another thought. But the Kentucky-Tennessee game may be – the most lopsided conference game we have this week. I'm not gonna talk about Oklahoma, Maine, or Mississippi State and UMass, but in the conference matchups, there were a couple of other games that maybe a few weeks ago looked like they might be more one-sided. But it's hard for me to see Kentucky being able to hang with Tennessee unless the Vols just completely helped them out.
Yeah, you know, 2 years ago when they came to Knoxville, and that was Levis's senior year. Of course, Levis had a much better offensive line his junior year. But Tennessee 2 years ago just clobbered them 44-6. I don't think it'll be that bad. But again, Kentucky's just really beat up. Tennessee, I think, really wants to prove You know, really the only thing Tennessee hadn't done this year, because they've won at home, they've won on the road, they've won at neutral sites. The only thing they really haven't done is look good after an open date, because they, you know, their open date preceded the Arkansas game, which really kind of eroded a lot of the momentum after that 4-0 start. So I know they want to prove that they're a lot fresher and a lot more impressive than the last time they came off an open date. But, yeah, I just think, you know, Jarquez Hunter just ran all over him. Don't you know Dylan Sampson, you know, saw that and was like, hey, can I do the same thing? I just think that Kentucky's run defense right now is really hurting, and they're just kind of a skeleton defensively. You know, they've struggled all year on offense, but now you've just seen the injuries really pile up, because that defense looked nothing like the defense you saw them play against Georgia and them play against Ole Miss. But, you know, if Tennessee wins Saturday night, that will be the 37th win in the last 40 years against Kentucky.
Wow.
Kentucky had a couple, I mean, between the struggles historically against Auburn, the struggles historically against Florida until about 5 years ago, and that Tennessee series, like, there are a couple of, like, eye-popping, you know, the last 25 years, last 40 years, last 50 years records for Kentucky with conference foes they see a lot.
Yeah, and of course, Georgia is another one that's been since 2009, since they've beaten Georgia. The wild thing about Kentucky is Kentucky's had a couple of 10-win seasons under Stoops, and they've lost to Tennessee in each of those 10-win seasons. So even when Kentucky's at their best, they still haven't been able to beat Tennessee.
How warm is the seat getting under Mark Stoops?
I don't think it is, because he's been there so – I mean, he's taken them to 8 straight bowl games. He's the winningest coach in program history. You know, he signed – I mean, he's gotten a fairly new contract extension just because he was being looked at for other jobs. But, you know, he is a victim of his own success. I mean, it used to be you could say Mark Stoops is the safest coach in the league just because that had become a 2-10 program under Joker Phillips. So – when you went 7-5 at Kentucky, that was like throw a parade, get a contract extension. But then when he started going 10-3 a couple of times, all of a sudden 6-6 and 7-5 didn't mean as much. And now they're sitting there 3-5, and in all likelihood, that bowl streak is going to come to an end, because they've either got to beat Tennessee or Texas, you know, to avoid missing out on a bowl. You lose both of those, and there you've got 7 losses, and that doesn't even count the Louisville game. So, but I think it's a $44 million buyout.
Oh, okay. So, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because they gave him another rollover and another extension like a year or two ago, and so he's got a lengthy. He's one of those that has a deal through like 30 or something crazy. So, I mean, it's a tough place. I've been up there, I don't know, 15 times to cover games through the years, and they beat Georgia when Matthew Stafford was a freshman in 06, and I think that's the only time I've ever witnessed a Kentucky win in Lexington.
They probably, they knew that, they may not invite you back, David.
I even saw DiNardo and Vandy one time go up there, man, and clobber them. So, yeah, I just, you know, and I've seen Auburn win up there 2 or 3 times. It's just, yeah, it's one of those deals where I do not see Kentucky win a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to move on, because that's a tough pill
that's
to swallow.
Significant, yes.
It's a $44 million pill. I have real doubts as to whether or not they'll ever be good again under Mark Stoops in a new SEC without the East. Like,
exactly. It gets tougher and tougher. And you know, one possibility, and I've talked to a guy from the Lexington Herald Leader about this, is you just saw the situation with Calipari, where he wasn't fired. He just found kind of another opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because things had gotten so stale. And, you know, the next thing you know, you get boosters that, like, withdraw their support and that kind of thing. And you're like, okay, you know something? Maybe it's time for me to look to another opportunity in another place that may be more excited to have me. You know, again, if you're Stoops, you're the winningest coach in program history. I mean, I'm sure he could land someplace decent. And that may be what transpires.
All right. Speaking of Kentucky, How big a thorn is that in Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss's side right now? As you know, we looked at their schedule and said, man, this is made for a team to make a playoff run, but didn't expect them to lose that Kentucky game. They lose at LSU this weekend. They're in Fayetteville with Georgia coming up next week. This is an absolute must win for Ole Miss, and then I think they probably need to beat Georgia. A 3-loss Ole Miss team, I don't know that a 3-loss SEC team is going to make the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, certainly not Ole Miss. We've talked about Ole Miss and Missouri because of those schedules and really not having the, you know, sometimes I do think tradition and stuff like that kind of does factor into some of these things with selection committees and voters and stuff like that. But I felt all along that Ole Miss and Missouri were the two teams that just, you know, at 10-2 even, you know, mm-hmm. they weren't just a slam dunk. Like you said, Ole Miss already has the two losses. I do think they take care of business this week. There's something about, you know, even that Oklahoma game in Oxford last week, you're like, is this going to happen again? I mean, are they going to stumble around and lose at home again? But, you know, I think they play well at Arkansas, and I think they get a much-needed win to kind of stay in the picture there before Georgia comes to town.
Texas A&M with a big win. Boy, I wasn't able to be watching it, just keeping up with it, and I just saw the LSU score as it was going along, and I thought, wow.
Both of these games, A&M and Ole Miss, feel like it's, you know, not to turn this into like a handicapping thing, David, but they both feel like games where you would think the road team is capable of being multiple scores better, but the home teams are feisty enough to make you wonder.
Yeah, I actually feel more confident in Ole Miss getting like a 10 or 14 point win at Arkansas. Yep. Than I am Texas A&M. I mean, they're getting the pats on the back this week, and mm-hmm. and you know, and it's an interesting dynamic because when you think about Oklahoma after playing Tennessee, they made the quarterback change. You know, when I went out to Norman, Jackson Arnold was struggling, so they put the Hawkins kid in, and you saw him have some success. But then when they played South Carolina, he was lost and was throwing interceptions, and they got behind 21-0 in no time. You saw that with Texas A&M. They make the change, you know, to Marcel Reed, a kid who I saw as early as ninth grade because that team NBA would play Baylor and McCauley down here in Chattanooga. You know, and if they go with Marcel Reed, I love those South Carolina defensive ends. I love that whole defensive front. I could see South Carolina absolutely frustrating Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M wins this thing in like a field goal game. I think that this game to me has the ability to be the most intriguing.
Yeah, these are the kinds of games where it's tough sometimes to get over last week, and those are the ones I know coaches are extremely concerned with. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm really interested in this one. You know, a few weeks ago, I would have thought. And I still think they win. I mean, when I look at the Georgia Florida game, the Bulldogs are no question the more talented team. But I don't know why. I feel like Florida may hang in there a little better for sure than we thought a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think you know, in DJ Lagway, and I know this is just using the two games he started, which is Samford and Kentucky, and those teams are not world beaters, but in those two games, he's got 8 total passes of 40 yards or longer. And so his touch on the deep ball has been really, really impressive so far. And that's where Georgia, you know, they haven't always been great there this season. And you think about, they've got a couple of kids that are going to have to sit out the first half in that secondary because of targeting. So it becomes kind of a unique dynamic. I do think this game stays close for a while. You know, I think it's one of these games that could maybe even go in the fourth quarter with Georgia up 24-17, and maybe they pull away and win like 34-17 or 38-17. I think when it's all said and done, I mean, just that Michael Williams and Jalen Walker, they're awfully tough to deal with. And really, Florida hadn't been able to really stop anybody on the ground. So I think, you know, it's definitely a unique dynamic with ETN facing his former team, but ETN could have a pretty big game potentially.
Yeah, this is the start of a ridiculous stretch for the Gators after Jacksonville, at Texas, LSU, and Ole Miss are their next three ball games. So this is
that's a great four game stretch. But really, for a change now, we see Georgia.
Yeah, the next two.
This unbelievable gauntlet of going from Florida to Ole Miss to Tennessee. That's very un-Georgia-like historically schedule-wise.
Yeah, Texas, then, of course, the open date, but Texas, Florida, Ole Miss, Tennessee. So I do like the fact that we're getting to see some of these. I mean, as you mentioned with Kentucky, it's much tougher for you to be able to get around and have an easier schedule. You mentioned Missouri and Ole Miss. It looked like things were set up a little bit better for them. But, when you have schedules like that, you can't afford to lose a game that you shouldn't.
David, you thinking it's chalky this weekend, or are you thinking it's some upsets?
Well, we haven't gotten to the one here.
Well, historically, this is a weekend. The Georgia-Florida weekend is all – as someone who's picked games for our paper for, like, almost 30 years, I do worse Georgia-Florida weekend than any other weekend. For some reason, this weekend tends to have a lot of really weird things happening. And Bill, I want to just follow up on a point you were making, because the SEC has not announced yet. You talk about kicking the can down the road, on this 8-game or 9-game mm-hmm. league schedule thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kentucky's a perfect example of now going through this 16-team conference. You're going to have a lot of teams, South Carolina, they're going to be like, we've got to stay at 8. We have no chance of making a bowl with this league the way it is now, unless, we get more. And, I see both sides, but I really do hope the league goes to a 9-game just because of the inventory and just because of the infrequency. I want these teams to each have 3 permanent rivals and 6 rotating games instead of just 1 permanent rival and 7 rotate. I do not want to see Alabama and Tennessee play twice every 4 years.
David,
or Auburn, Georgia.
Well, no. if Auburn, Auburn, Georgia, Georgia and right. Alabama, Tennessee could do this too. But if Auburn, Georgia, if the SEC does that, and they stick with 4 non-conference games, there is a movement around here. We've had multiple members of the media talk about it. If that happens, Auburn needs to do everything in its power to schedule Georgia as a non-conference game. If the SEC sticks with 8 and tries to make you play 4 non-conference games in that situation, I would argue Alabama, Tennessee, the same thing. Use one of your 4 non-conference spots to make that game happen if it's not on the slate, because I would agree. I think those games need to be played.
It's an interesting concept, Dan, and it's actually not unprecedented, because there have been some years in the ACC where North Carolina and Wake Forest, mm-hmm. You think about the Big Four in Carolina with UNC, Duke, Wake, and NC State. There have been a couple of times where they've played as non-conference, even and not count them as league games just because of the rivalry sake.
Yeah, well, I'm 100% with you. I hope we go to 9. But it is surprising that it has taken this long and we still haven't heard that. Love to get your thoughts on Auburn Vandy. Vandy again last week showing that it hasn't been a fluke. They have played with everybody. I believe they've lost their 3 games by a total of 10 points after another battle where they had an opportunity against number 5 Texas.
Yeah, it's an interesting, and of course, the history of this rivalry is incredible when you think about how Vandy whipped up on Auburn so many times in the 30s and 40s, and it took Auburn forever to take the series lead. And the fact that Auburn has never lost to Vanderbilt in Auburn is a unique stat. But I think Auburn plays well. I think they've got the confidence now. And I do wonder if Vandy at some point is just going to have one of those hiccup games where, they've been so good in turnover margin this year. Obviously, we know where Auburn's been with that. But I don't know. I've just kind of got an inkling that Auburn plays well and wins this game by a touchdown. And who knows, if they get a couple more breaks, maybe they win by 10 or 13. But I think Auburn builds on what they did at Kentucky. And I think they kind of redeem themselves. Although, I don't have to tell Auburn fans about Pavia. I just think Auburn plays better against him this time around.
Yeah, or Hugh Freeze, because Pavia and his New Mexico State team handled Liberty with extreme ease a couple of years ago. So, yeah, let's just hope that this isn't one of those games that goes the wrong way on that Georgia-Florida weekend for you.
Yeah, they tend to. My worst percentages of the year are always this weekend. It's funny how that works. I don't know why.
Oh man. So what have you got on tap? Where are you heading anywhere this weekend?
I'll be in Knoxville. Did you know this is Kentucky's fourth consecutive week to play the 7:45 Eastern SEC Network game?
Huh. No, I hadn't realized that. That's crazy.
Yeah, Stoops on the SEC teleconference was like, yeah, this is our fourth of these in a row. Thanks a lot, SEC. This is a lot of fun.
Wow. Well, David, always great having you on. We kept you a little long today. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you're doing.
Yeah, timesfreepress.com for the articles and WGOW.com for the radio show, which is 2 to 5 Central every day.
Talk to you soon, David. Go Doyers.
All right. Enjoy the World Championship. Talk to y'all next week.
All right, David. David Pascal from Chattanooga joins us every Thursday. We need to get to break. Again, we've only got about 15 minutes left before we turn things over for Auburn women's basketball as we continue with The Drive.
I'm Wes Allen, Secretary of State. In Alabama.
211-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Our thanks to David Pascal. Always great stuff with David. Yeah, I hope that if this weekend goes sour with his picks, that he's not off there on the Auburn one. I heard some of your picks today.
How do you think I did?
I didn't hear all of them.
I went almost. Oh, we can. Yeah, whatever.
I guess
put that down.
Yeah. We can wait just a second.
Yeah, we can wait a second there. That one went automatically. Drew wasn't looking. You got to remember that sometimes the mind of their own. I didn't want to go all chalk. I thought about my initial snap judgment was all chalk. The only underdog I took was Arkansas. Home. I wanted to take one of the two.
And again, see, the thing that always messes me up with Doug's thing is his lines and then dealing with the lines. I looked back at it, and I've done really well picking who's going to win. I just, man, I'm off, it seems like, a point or two, and that's the point of it.
So,
Fortunately, I don't put money on
so
those.
So I took pretty much every favorite he offered, and then Arkansas was the lone. I wanted to take either Arkansas or South Carolina. I thought one of the two lone, one of the two home dogs maybe covers.
And it seems like so many people are going South Carolina.
I just have, I've just been pessimistic about their offense all season. I was watching the Old Dominion game.
I do think it's a tough time for Texas A&M.
It is, and I think A&M's going to have to show something through the air with the new quarterback. I don't think they're just going to be able to run the ball at will from that position. If they can, then
then look out.
Then the team's the rest of their schedule. Although I said this, I said this yesterday on the Observer Show, Bill, and I know it's a couple weeks away, but like, if Auburn wins against Vandy and they beat ULM, that A&M game is going to feel like part of a different season.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
Than a couple of weeks ago, and I think
it's the last home game chance to assure yourself of a postseason.
And I'll tell you what, if A&M wins between now and then, and they're looking at an undefeated in conference and a college football playoff type team, and all they have to do is survive a trip to Auburn to keep that hope alive. That's a real dangerous spot for a team to be in. Stichcomb said it at the end of the Auburn Kentucky broadcast when he said, I would not want to be a team. I would not want to be a team with Auburn on the schedule between now and the end of the season. And I think that's because that team might have been able to iron out some of the things holding them back over the first few weeks.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Did you say it's Dak?
Tex,
hold on. We're going to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll be right back here on the Thursday Drive.